Everyone, welcome our new sponsor, Diet Smoke.
Diet Smoke is the premier source for legal THC and mushroom products.
The team at Diet Smoke sent us gummies to enjoy while we whore and chill. My favorite are the grape sleep gummies.
And mine are the cherry lime gummies. With a wide range of strengths and doses, Diet Smoke promises to find the perfect product for you.
Whether you want something strong to unwind, a boost of energy to keep you going, or a lighter option for a mellow high, Diet Smoke has you covered.
They understand everyone is different, which is why they're dedicated to helping you find the perfect product. Their customer service team will be by your side helping you along the way.
Diet Smoke has cannabis gummies, shots, and vapes, each one made to deliver the best balance of flavor and effect.
So don't settle for less and join the Diet Smoke community and discover the buzz for you. Visit dietsmoke.com today and use code DFWTO for 50% off any item and enjoy your journey to cannabis bliss.
Diet Smoke, your partner in finding the perfect THC and mushroom products. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Hey guys, it's Casper
and Becky
from the DFWTO podcast. If you've been a longtime listener, you know how much mental health means to us.
Mental health actually plays a role in many horror films, especially the final girl subgenre. Whether it's Nancy facing her nightmares and defeating Freddy, or Sydney taking out Ghostface to overcome the trauma of and avenge her mother's death. Not only are horror movies a huge comfort to Casper and I, so is putting our mental health first. And if you agree and you're searching for professional services, let BetterHelp be your guide.
BetterHelp will connect you with a licensed therapist who can help you start your journey of self-awareness and discovery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and convenient for any type of schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get yourself matched up with a licensed therapist, and you can also switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Just like the final girls that triumph over evil, triumph over your trauma with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/DFWTO and save 10% off your first month when you sign up today. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DFWTO.
And remember, guys,
Don't
don't fuck
fuck
with
with
the
the
original.
original. Now let's get into the episode.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the DFWTO podcast. I'm your host, Casper.
I am your other host, Becky Gremlin.
Here to bring you all things spooky on Wednesdays because.
Wednesdays are for podcast.
So, guys, we mentioned last week that we had a surprise guest on for the podcast. Mr. Eduardo Sanchez has decided to come on to our podcast, which we are very excited about. As you guys know, we talk about Blair Witch almost every single episode that we ever have. It always comes up in something.
Or exists. We
Or
talk
exists. We talk
about
about exists a lot
yeah, we
too,
talk about
especially in
that
the
as well.
cryptid episodes. But Mr. Eduardo has been so kind to come on our podcast, and we are very grateful to have him. So thank you so much for coming.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate this. This is we've done quite a number of interviews, but this is definitely like top tier. F 15-year-old Becky is so grateful for this interview right now.
It was very, very sweet of you to offer to come on. That was very, very nice. I wasn't expecting that at all. So that was very kind of you.
No, I mean, if people are willing to talk to me, I'm open to talking to them. So it's always a fun time,
Yeah, we feel the same way. We started off small and we built a pretty sizable audience, so it's been great. It's been a fun ride so far. But so we always like to start off, and I just want to tell my audience, I know I sound terrible, guys. I'm so
Becky is
sorry.
on the
I
struggle
swear
list
to
right
God,
now.
I sound way worser than I feel right now, but I've got all the medicines and the cough drops, and I wouldn't have missed this for the world. So I just wanted to preface that.
She is really doing her best.
But Eduardo, we like to start off by asking everybody what it's Scream and a whole bunch of different horror films really inspired this podcast, but we always like to start off by asking people just kind of like an icebreaker what their favorite scary movie is. So what would you say your favorite horror movie is?
I mean, probably, I mean, I have a, it's kind of a tough question because, you know, it depends on like whether it's like a, you know, fun movie or like scary movie. You know, like I, you know, the I think that for me the scariest movie is The Exorcist. That freaked me out as a kid. But I like, I mean, you know, as far as horror movies are concerned, you know, I love Evil Dead 2, and I love Amityville Horror and The Shining and Jaws even. Like, you know, there were so many movies when I was younger that like just creeped me out. The Omen was a real creeper when I was little. But you know, so and honestly, I like never grew up like, you know, considering myself like a horror fan, because I was like kind of, I was pretty afraid of those movies. Like, you know, it was like not a fun experience for me. But I did enjoy them, and some of them were, you know, so cool that you had to see them. And now I've like really grown kind of like, you know, an appreciation for horror and, you know, how difficult it is. And we never get enough respect and all that stuff. But that's for a different podcast, you know.
It's very true. And you named off basically all the films that I was introduced to later on and got me into the horror. But yeah, when I was really little, I couldn't even watch the transformation scene in Teen Wolf. And that's not even a horror film because it used to scare the heck out of me. So
yeah. I mean, the thing is that when you're a kid, there's like, you know, like the weirdest things scare you, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're saying, even if it's like just kind of a fun movie like Teen Wolf, like there's still, you know, it's still very shocking to a young kid, you know. So I know what you're saying.
Do you know the movie Abominable?
Yeah, the Bigfoot movie?
Yeah. So I was like 12. I had never seen anything like that in my life. And when I lived with my parents, we used to live by a canal, so we lived by woods.
And oh my God.
That movie, I slept with my nightlight, like all of my lights on for a week. Because I was like, Bigfoot is going to come out of the woods and Bigfoot is going to get
and
me.
And kill you.
I mean, that's basically my whole childhood is like, just because I was really into, you know, the Bigfoot documentaries and
yes.
like that show that was called In Search Of.
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, you know, like it was just like a documentary every week about, you know, just something creepy. And I was sure Bigfoot was going to be like you, like actually, I was sure Bigfoot was going to be coming through the window at any minute. You know, but I, again, it's like kind of, I was just kind of, I don't know why I did it, but I just kept watching those documentaries and I just loved it, you know? So like, you know, for me, like Exist was kind of a dream come true, you know, to make a Bigfoot movie. Finally, you know, I've been trying to make a Bigfoot movie since I was, you know, 16 years old. So, you know, we finally did it. But yeah, the Bigfoot creeped me out. It still creeps me out, you know?
Me too. Bigfoot and aliens. I always thought as a kid that either Bigfoot was going to get me or I was going to get abducted by aliens, that one or the other was going to happen, because it was In Search Of and Unsolved Mysteries. And I would watch The X-Files with my dad. And like,
oh my God. Yeah. And like, you know, remember Communion? The book was much scarier than the movie, but the book, like, I read it in college and it freaked me out. So yeah, I, me too. Aliens is kind of my thing too. It's like, you know, I love them, but I'm terrified of them.
Yeah. So we're going to get into Exist, because I always tell people that hands down, my two favorite Bigfoot movies are Exist and Willow Creek. I think both, and it's so strange how different those movies are, mm-hmm. but scary in the same way as, and at the same time, whereas Willow Creek, you don't see anything and that terrifies you. And then in Exist, you see it and it terrifies you. But before we do, I know, and you know, because it's the elephant in the room, it is the 25-year anniversary of the Blair Witch Project, and it is what started my love of found footage. And
Amen.
As I told you when I met you, that I was 15, saw it in a basement theater of a mall that doesn't even exist anymore. The mall's gone. And the movie just, it just changed my whole life. It changed everything. I know you've probably been asked every question under the sun about the Blair Witch Project. So the only question I've ever wanted to ask you is there one question you've never been asked about the movie, or maybe if there's just like one tidbit or something out there that like nobody knows about the movie that you can say
Or
publicly?
that you would just like to share that you've never been able to.
Everyone, like I was just at Panic Fest in Kansas City, and we got actually like a pretty original question, which we had we Mike and I, the act, the guy who stars in the movie, we were there and we were like, man, we haven't heard that question before. There's so much, to Blair Witch, and there's so much like behind the scenes stuff that was never, that has never been really told, no, I can't really. I'm kind of drawing a blank as far as something that I've never told anybody. It was such an experimental film. We were just kind of, making things up as we went along, and I think that, I guess I've never really like kind of conscious, like really brought up the idea of like how scary that was, like how, we were like at the end of our ropes, like financially. We were like, I was in my late 20s, and I had no money and I was broke. I had low student loans still, and Blair Witch was kind of like, if it didn't work, we were going to be in trouble. And then, part of that also was just like the idea of like, what the hell are we making? So there was like so much doubt in the movie. But I think I've never really talked about that too much. The idea of like how scary it was to actually make it, and just like, we had nothing to lose, but it was like we had everything to lose. Like that was that. That was kind of our last hurrah.
Well, I appreciate that a lot because we've interviewed several independent filmmakers and people just starting out, or maybe it's their first feature film, and that's a lot of what we hear is the process of it being so scary and not knowing how it's going to work out, how it's going to be picked up. You've put your life savings in it, you're in credit card debt, whatever, because you really want to make this film work and hope that it resonates to an audience. And another thing with Blair Witch was really at that time, and again, I was 15 when the movie came out. The marketing behind that film was
Brilliant.
insane. I don't think I've seen anything since because internet and all of that was still in its infancy. I know at one point there was a website because I was on it all the time. I drove my parents crazy. Like just like reading Heather's diaries and like trying to get all this like information. I mean, I bought hook, line, sinker into it. The story of the witch, just the whole lore behind Ellie Kedward and the Rustin Parr story. Yeah, I think if people weren't around for that time, it was just a time that was insane. The marketing around the film itself.
It was like, like we, I think what made it unique was that it was, and not super unique, but I think the first time it had been done on the internet, because, the web, the World Wide Web was so, it just in its infancy, and we always felt that like the best marketing was like, marketing that kind of told stories, and, entertain people, while you're marketing the movie. I'm a big Star Wars fan, and there was a thing called Shadows of the Empire in like the mid 90s that was like this multimedia kind of story, and it wasn't a movie or a TV show. It was like comic books, it was like a video game, it was a novel. And I really loved like how it was like, you had to kind of, you kind of had to like read all the things and play the video game to get the full story. And so when Blair Witch, came out, not that we were thinking that we were Star Wars level, but I had already kind of loved that approach. And then for us, it was just kind of like, let's just tell the story. Let's like, let's make the website entertaining. And then luckily we, you know, we got an opportunity once the movie was sold to, like, you know, do the Sci-Fi Channel special Curse of the Blair Witch. Yeah. And we were able to do the dossier and, you know, all the stuff. And that's one of the things that, you know, in the website, you know, I started putting up Heather's journal just as a part of, like, you know, like, that's really, that's, you know, if you had this footage, that's exactly what you would do, you know. But even Heather's journal told, like, a little story, you know what I mean? So I think that, you know, that was, like, for us, it was just, you know, couldn't afford, like, basic marketing. We couldn't afford, like, commercials or anything like that, or ads, you know. So for us, it was like, let's just tell this story on the internet. And then, you know, it hadn't really been done before, back then, like, you know, movie marketing on the web was just basically, here's the stars, here's the trailer, and, you know, here are the theaters to go see it, you know. And we kind of, you know, we didn't have, you know, we were still, you know, we hadn't been bought yet. This was before Sundance. So it was basically just for the fans, you know. But you know, it was exciting because we got so much great feedback from the website, you know. It immediately started kind of hitting, it kind of struck a nerve, you know, and we were getting, you know, people on our discussion board from all over the world, you know. It was kind of exciting, like, man, this movie's like, there's people in Australia that are waiting for this movie, you know.
It was very,
and, before you could even put really video on the web, you know, like, video was very, you know, because it was still during the time of dial-up, you know. So the internet connection was very slow. So, but it was fun. I mean, it really kind of, again, like, we were really broke during that time, and I was in charge of the website, you know, early on, and it really kind of just kept me motivated as far as, like, you know, continuing to make this movie and continue to edit and continue to work on the website, because, you know, we had such a good little, you know, base of fans already just from the beginning, you know. So that was really exciting for us.
Well, it's really cool, like, you talking about all that. It's like, you didn't make a movie, you made an experience.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just like, okay, well, you know, you go watch a trailer or you see a trailer and then maybe you look up the IMDb page or, you know, whatever. You made a whole experience. You're like, here's a diary, here's a website.
You have to remember, you couldn't look up an IMDb page back then.
Yeah.
I know.
You know what I mean, though.
Like, I know.
You're
yeah.
not just Nowadays. Watching a trailer on YouTube. You're watching even YouTube in its infancy. But taking the infancy of the internet and completely using it to make a whole experience like this is just great. And I, unfortunately, was only 6 years old when it came out.
Yeah.
So I did not get to experience the whole process of it. But hearing it through Becky and then just being... Like, I think the first found footage movie I actually watched was Cloverfield. I was like, no. And then Becky was like, watch this one. Watch The Blair Witch. And so I kind of got turned on to it. And I was like, oh, wow, this is actually good. Like, this isn't making me want to throw up. So,
even though some people did say with the camera.
I
really
like, you know, I like Cloverfield.
I love Cloverfield.
Oh, I love that.
I love it now that I can handle found footage way better than I could. It's because it was...
Yeah, no, it's like... you know, it was a cool movie because it was like, you know, it was a few years after Blair Witch and the found footage craze hadn't really begun yet. You know, like, it was mm-hmm. kind of like, Cloverfield was kind of like the stamp of approval for Hollywood to get, you know, to start doing found footage movies. And then everything after that was just, you know, it kind of had, there's a kind of an explosion after that. But yeah, I thought it was really well done. But yeah, I mean, and for us, like, you know, as far as marketing, like, that's the kind of stuff that we love, you know, like, we love, like, kind of really getting deep into things and, like, you know, again, not treating it as marketing, but treating it as, like, you know, a story, like, the story right. continues. And I mean, it definitely is marketing because you're definitely leading people toward the movie or toward the books or whatever, but it's just more fun than just straight out, you know, like you were saying, like, just telling people, hey, here's the IMDb page and here's the this and go see it. You know what I mean? Go see it in your theater. Like, it's, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, entertaining. So people have a good time and they come back to it and they tell their friends. And, you know, that it was just a movie that was like, it was totally, you know, based on word of mouth, that, you know, especially at the beginning, you know. Yeah. So, you know, we figured let's do something interesting. Let's make something that, you know, something that we want to see, you know. So, but again, we, you know, it wasn't like we were like geniuses and we like knew what the hell we were doing. I mean, we're just throwing shit against the wall, you know what I mean? And
it doesn't show. It doesn't show.
Like, all right, well, we'll try this. sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't work, you know? So it was like, but it was fun, you know, it was fun. It was like, we were like so connected to the fans. Like, you know, we were like, you know, for the first time ever, you could actually like talk to people and, you know, communicate with people directly that were going to end up, you know, seeing your movie. And it was, you know, as a filmmaker, it was a, you know, really exciting, you know, process, you know?
I'm sure it was. I was around when Paranormal Activity did its...
Yeah.
Really, which, honestly, Paranormal Activity, to me, did the best with marketing after Blair Witch.
Right.
Yeah. And so I got to experience
only to go to, like, a few screenings.
Right.
And they only released it.
And then they were being super
yeah.
weird about it. Because they
very
were...
Very secretive about
it.
Because
I was like,
whole...
is this Blair Witch? Is it fake or is it real?
Yeah.
Like, what is happening? So...
Yeah, no, they did a good job, and they followed a lot of like kind of the Blair Witch playbook, and you're right, probably the best that it's been since Blair Witch. You know, like they really capitalized on that.
Well, that's awesome. I really want to talk to you about Exist too, because like
oh,
I
yeah.
know that
we gotta get into Exist.
As much as we love the Blair Witch Project, it was like I was telling you at the con. It was so nice to finally see, like, first of all, Exist is my favorite found footage Bigfoot movie. It's actually my favorite Bigfoot movie anyway. It used to be Legend of Boggy Creek, but that one has not aged very well. But it holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For you too. I love, I mean, you know, without Boggy Creek, you know, there probably wouldn't have been a Blair Witch, you know, so.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I think any type of movie like that, set
yeah.
in the woods and just the whole, yeah.
Yeah, Legend of Boggy Creek has a very nostalgic, very special place in my heart. But kind of like I was talking to you at the con with Exists, and you know how you were talking about a little bit ago about how you just really wanted to get a Bigfoot movie made. Do you want to talk about your process as far as getting what really drove you to make the movie Exists?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been wanting, like I said, I've been wanting to make a Bigfoot movie since I was a little kid, and I've always felt that, you know, Bigfoot never gets, like, they never spend enough money on the suit, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
because most of the time, Bigfoot movies are low budget, and they just don't have, you know, the resources to spend the kind of money on a suit, you know, that you should, you know? And so, you know, I always felt that, like, you know, Bigfoot didn't look great in movies, you know, like, it didn't look real, you know what I mean? And I always felt that like if you brought the right approach to it and you got the right people, obviously the right effects company, and you know, spent some money, you could really bring a Bigfoot to life. And that's kind of the big thing with Exist, because it was actually the big Exist was like the third Bigfoot script that I wrote. The first one was it was like a big like a kind of an action. It was a period piece about you know, in the right after the Civil War, like late 1800s, kind of in the middle of nowhere, like this tribe of Bigfoot runs into these people, or these people actually run into a tribe of Bigfoot, and all hell breaks loose. But you know, that was like a big bucket movie, and I actually, you know, almost sold it. Like I was trying to use some of the Blair Witch juice, but I didn't have quite enough juice for that. But then I wrote another movie, you know, with the other writers. We wrote a movie which was actually called Exists also, and it was like a found footage, bigger budget, like maybe $5 or $6 million. And that one almost got made too, almost got bought. And, you know, it kind of, we had a company called Legendary that, you know, that does all the King Kong movies. They were really interested. They were kind of like, they told us, like, you know, that they've been trying to break the Bigfoot thing for a while. They spent a bunch of money, but, you know, writing scripts, and they felt that our script was kind of like the first script that, you know, like really made it work, you know. But, you know, they went up the chain to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers was like, nah, we're not, you know, we don't want to make a Bigfoot movie, you know, because again, Bigfoot never gets any respect, you know what I mean?
It really doesn't,
unfortunately,
though.
So we were kind of very frustrated, and then we were like, you know, let's just make a bare bones, you know, the simplest, you know, Bigfoot movie we could think of. And that ended up being, you know, we wrote this thing for, you know, very just a simple kind of story, you know, limited characters. But we, you know, we had the money, we had the resources to spend the money on the suit. And, you know, again, like, I think, you know, I mean, you know, I really like Exist. I think it's a good film, but I really am proud of like how the creature looks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's the best looking creature, you know, the best looking Bigfoot I think ever caught on film. You know, but again, it was like, you know, just frustrating to see, you know, like, again, Bigfoot never got, you know, the respect I thought that it, you know, that the creature deserved, you know? And, so basically that was our chance to do it. And you know, luckily it worked, you know?
And I thought it looked amazing.
I did really too. I was going to say, if people, you know, if people believe the Patterson Gimli footage to be mm-hmm. real, yeah. Exists that Bigfoot,
it looks like.
I mean, that it's like one and the same. You would actually believe that was Bigfoot.
Yeah, it you know, we were like, you know, again, like, we spent some money and we got, like, you know, some really great special, you know, suit people, like the kind of the best in the business. And yeah, you know, we were really proud. You know, Brian Steele came in and, you know, played the creature, and it was a great, you know, it was absolutely a dream come true. Like, you know, he would send me, you know, videos of him, you know, running around in his backyard, like, you
nice.
Know, testing, like, you know, how should he walk and how should he run and this and that. You know, and it was a trip. And then, you know, at a certain point, they sent me like fur samples, like, what kind of fur do you want on the Bigfoot? And so it was just kind of like a, you know, it was a dream come true to be able to, like, you know, again, pick out the fur of my creature of Bigfoot, and, you know, and honestly, finally make a Bigfoot movie. You know, it was something that I had been wanting to do since I was a little kid, and, you know, and we finally got to do it. And I you know, we were just very lucky to have done it, you know.
That ending shot, like, towards the end of the movie, when you see her, I'm assuming it's to her because she's pretty pissed about her baby. So I'm assuming it's a woman.
When it's the over the shoulder.
It's a mama.
The over the shoulder.
Yeah. When she's got the hair in her face and she's just breathing heavily.
Perfect.
And then there's like a wound on her arm. I literally was like, that is the coolest looking fucking Bigfoot I've ever seen. Because, like, I think there's a movie called Bigfoot. I think it's just called Bigfoot. And the Bigfoot in that I didn't care for. I rewatched Abominable and couldn't believe I was scared of that movie and was like, that was terrible.
You were a kid, though.
I was a child, but I didn't like the Bigfoot in that movie. Like Becky says, you know, I love Willow Creek, but you don't see it, which really gives such a different kind of fear for
right.
that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like Willow Creek to me is like Blair Witch with Bigfoot.
It is. And that's the comparison it always gets.
Yep. Exactly. But, like, I really do think you should be proud of that Bigfoot, because I did. I loved the baby. I thought the baby looked great.
Thank you. Thanks. I mean, we, you know, there's a company called Spectral Motion out of LA did it. And, you know, they're just, you know, it was, again, we spent the money on it. And you know, it was, you know, I was really proud of how it looked. And it's like, you know, hopefully if I would love to make another Bigfoot movie, but to me, that's kind of like, you know, that's kind of like the baseline of like how Bigfoot should look in movies. And you know, and look, and there have been some cool ones, like even Abominable, like, you know, it's a cool little movie. It's like, you know, it's more of a monster movie. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, it was fun. You know, it's a fun movie. It's fun for its time. And I know some of the guys that did the movie. I know Ryan, and I know the DP, Neil, you know, who shot the movie. And so, you know, there are like, you know, the whole Bigfoot film thing is, you know, for me, I consider them kind of a fan, like a family, you know, and, and I, you know, there aren't many Bigfoot movies that I don't like, you know what I mean? So, cause I'm just a big fan of that subgenre, you know what I mean? But
mm-hmm.
I just thought that, like, you know, we were, you know, we wanted to, you know, it was important for me at least, to not you know, make the creature a monster. You know what I mean? Like, I felt it was very important that to give it human qualities, and not just make it like, oh my God, this creature's like, you know, killing people just for the sake of killing people. You know, it's not eating people. It's just kind of like, again, like what you were saying, it's like, it's just hurt and it doesn't know what to do. And it's taking it out on these people who, you know, basically, you know, killed her cub, you know? So, you know, to me, that's kind of the big thing, because it's not like, I take Bigfoot kind of seriously. You know what I mean? Like it's, you know, and whether I believe in it or not is not really important, but I feel that like there's so many people out there who like, you know, love Bigfoot and like really have studied it. And to me, it was like, I wanted the Bigfoot movie that those people would love, you know?
Oh, 100%. And you hit the right audience, because we love Bigfoot's like my favorite cryptid besides like skinwalkers and stuff. Like if there's any cryptid I would want to see, 100% would be a Bigfoot. Like I want to go camping and I want to be like, I acknowledge you. How you doing? Cool. And then
get a clear picture.
To go out, you know, and do like some Bigfoot searches, but I'm always like, nah. That's not for me.
I'm like, do you mind if I take a picture of you that is not potato quality? Can you just stand there and be like, just don't move?
Yeah.
And I still have potato quality.
Clear picture.
And then I love what somebody said. They were like, has anyone thought that maybe Bigfoot is blurry? Yeah, and that's why like pictures are always blurry.
Well, but that, that actually comes from, that is a rest in peace to Mitch Hedberg. That's a great Mitch Hedberg joke about maybe Bigfoot is blurry. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, I, that's just such a great joke, because it sort of gives to like, well, maybe that's why nobody can get a clear picture of him.
Because you're right. It's like always a mystery as far as like, you know, why haven't, you know, we got all these great cameras, all this technology, but we can't get a clear picture of Bigfoot, you know?
Bigfoot is just pixelated. In real life, he's just pixelated.
Just naturally pixelated.
The thing that I did, 16-bit. The thing that I did really love about exists too, when you're going back to like not painting Bigfoot as like a typical monster. Essentially, what the movie seemed to do at the end was sort of make the human the monster. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the monster. You're the one that killed my child. And that's why I'm angry at you. Like I think that was, that whole dichotomy in the story at the end was perfect.
And it like took until he said it was an accident. We didn't. I'm sorry.
Right.
For her to be like, shit. Like for her to actually just walk away. It was just like
there was like this
connection.
I need
you to realize what you did.
Right.
And then when he did, she walked away.
Right.
And I did. I loved that too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, cool. I mean, and I was like really, you know, again, like I wanted to make the creature, you know, as human as possible. I mean, it's definitely a creature, but it has human, you know, characteristics. And I was, when we were writing the script, we had this last scene and I was like, man, how am I going to like convey all these kind of, you know, very complex kind of emotions and kind of complex ideas for a creature that doesn't talk, you know what I mean? And then when we did a test of Brian in the suit, and I was like so happy, because I was like, oh my God, I can like, I never expected that I was going to be able to get like that close to it. You know what I mean? I always felt that I was going to have to like keep my distance, especially from the face, you know? And I was so excited when I finally saw it. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be able to like get right in there and like, you know, get a close up of Bigfoot, you know, that like, never been seen. You know?
Yes.
A close up of Bigfoot. And I always felt that like the suit was so good and Brian's performance was so good that we were able to like, you know, pull it off, you know. And I'm glad like people did, you know, get the idea that it wasn't like just, you know, I try to humanize the creature. I try to give it a reason for why it's killing people and why it's angry. And I think, you know, it worked, you know.
Oh, it definitely did. It was perfect. I wanted to get kind of to get into more recent stuff you've worked on. I rewatched Satanic Hispanics today.
Yeah.
And that, it's amazing. I told Casper that It is definitely in my top five favorite horror anthologies now. It was done so well. And from someone who has, I'm Black, but I have Latinos in my family, like just the representation of that, and specifically in a genre that I love, was perfect and done so well and so respectfully. And I don't think it could have been done any other way without having Latino representation, not only in the acting, but in the directors and everything as well. How did you get involved with doing that?
Well, first of all, thanks a lot. I mean, it really does mean a lot to us that, like, you know, that people are, you know, being represented, and, you know, that, you know, that people are proud of the movie, and, you know, because that's really what, you know, we wanted, is like, we just wanted to be like, because, you know, because like, the Latinos in general really love horror, you know, like,
yes,
like, we are like a huge, like, you know, we are a huge, you know, part of the audience of horror movies, like, you know, just horror, you know, Latino people just love horror more than other groups, you know? And I think it's, I think, you know, it has to do with like the fact that, you know, I mean, I'm from Cuba, and, you know, like, you know, the Latino population has always been kind of, you know, marginalized, and the countries have always been taken advantage of, and that, you know, there's a lot of poverty and a lot of like exploitation, and, you know, like almost every country in Central America or South America has been exploited, you know, by European powers, you know, one way or another. And I think that's a real horror, you know, that's a real horror of a life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, we can just, I don't know, for us, it's just like, it's more, it's kind of like a way to like, you know, exercise our demons, you know what I mean? Of having this kind of harsh life and this harsh, yeah, at least, you know, I mean, and now, you know, I mean, luckily, you know, I've been blessed to be in this, you know, come to this country, and, you know, I'm definitely living the American dream, but there's still so much hardship out there. I think that there's this thing of just like, oh, you know, my life is, you know, this way, you know, I think we're just able to handle horror better, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So we felt, you know, that it was just about time to like say, hey, you know, this is us Hispanics making horror, and also, you know, there's so many great horror filmmakers, and you know, the Hispanic horror filmmakers, and you know, it has like this, there's this, you know, history of horror, you know, that's you know, comes from Latinos. So it was just a, you know, it was a dream come true for me. It was you know, Alejandro Brugues and Mike Mendez. I've been friends with them, and they, you know, they had this idea, and they're like calling me up, and they're like, hey, you know, we're doing this anthology, and it's gonna, you know, we're doing this and that. And I was like, you know, I've been doing mostly television for like the last 10 years, and I really love it. And I'm like, you know, kind of like very, you know, hesitant to get into features, you know, like because there's so much, it's so much more work, you know? And I was like, well, you know, yeah, I'd love to do it, whatever, but, and then they told me the name, you know, and I was like, Satanic Hispanics, I gotta be a part of that. You know, like,
perfect.
such a great name. You can kind of see what the movie's gonna be. And then, you know, they got, you know, Gigi, and they got Damian, and like, you know, they got some, you know, it was a really good, really great, like, little selection of Latino filmmakers. And, you know, it was just like kind of like a labor of love, you know, because we didn't make any money. We still haven't really made any money, you know, but we thought like kind of like what your reaction was, like we thought it was like kind of an important thing to put out there, and like to, you know, just to, again, like to show people that, you know, expand, you know, that we do have this love of horror, and a very unique love of horror. You know what I mean? It's not like we, you know, so, you know, it was just about time that we got a little bit of, you know, representation, and also, you know, had some fun with it. You know what I mean? Like, we try not to take ourselves too seriously. I was just really proud to have been a part of the project, you know?
Well, it was amazing. I, even the tagline is so, 'cause I have to read this for people who haven't, five stories, from five Latino AF directors. I mean, that is like, it's it, that that's amazing. That's amazing. And I, you know, I've always, we've preached that so much on this podcast, how Black and brown representation in horror is so important. And, you know, and like I said, again, being a Black woman with my background and my family and having Hispanics in my family, like, this type of representation is so important to show that, like, hey, we're just like everybody else. And you're exactly right with, I think it's the same thing in Black culture also, that like, we have our own real horrors and with colonization and all that stuff.
Can I just say the beginning of the horror noir, am I pronouncing that right?
Horror noir, yeah.
When the beginning line,
which is also on Shudder.
Now, mind you, I'm white as fuck, but I'm definitely an ally.
We still love you.
But the beginning line when they said Black horror,
Black history is black horror.
I was like, oh fuck, this is gonna kill me. Oh god. And then it was just like,
and then it got into,
it really hit.
Yeah, like, I mean, because it is true that Black and brown people, our history comes from horror. And so when you're able to get, and then like you said though, but having like, there's the seriousness in it, and there were touches of that in Satanic Hispanics, but it was also funny. Like, you were able, and I think Black and brown people, we just have a way of laughing at pain because we just,
because we have to.
It's ingrained in us. Like, we have to, you know, you have to. So your segment in particular, El Vampiro, is, so not to give anything away if nobody's seen it yet, but I knew that it was just going to be, I was going to be laughing so hard when he got the blood on his shirt and pulled out the tie to go pin. I lost it. I lost it. I thought it was perfect.
I rarely get to do comedy, and we were trying to think of, like, you know, our individual segments, and at first I was going to do something very serious, and then somebody sent me this idea, and I was like, oh my god, I love this. And then I immediately thought of, like, Henke Madera, who I had worked with on Queen of the South. You know, him and I are good friends, and we're always like, yeah, let's do something together. And I always knew that, you know, he has such great comedy chops, you know, and he rarely gets to kind of flex them, you know what I mean? So I was like, Henke, man, I got this idea, this vampire gets stuck with daylight savings, and he misjudges the sunset, sunrise, and, you know, he's trying to get home, and and he was like, I'm in, man, I'm in. And then, you know, we started the script, and, and it worked out well. I was able to shoot it here locally, like near my house, and, you know, had a lot of people involved that were, you know, that local filmmakers, and then just, you know, and it was just a fun time. It was, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on me because it was like, you know, I was like, I'm kind of like a semi-celebrity here in my town. And like, we called in a lot of favors for this. So I was like, you know, really hoping that the movie, you know, that to make a good movie, you know what I mean? But I felt we all kind of came together and did something cool. And again, something fun, and give Hemke an opportunity to kind of, you know, spread his wings a little bit and do something that he's usually not, you know, doing. And so it was cool. It was just, I love doing it, and I hope that we're trying to talk about maybe doing a second part, and, you know, getting another set of Latino filmmakers, but we'll see, you know. Because I think it's important, you know, it's important to, like, kind of share these stories and share these kind of this different kind of point of view, you know what I mean, of all kinds of people, not just Black and brown, but, you know, just any, you know, women, and, you know, just any kind of person that hasn't, you know, people that haven't had the chance to kind of get out there and show what they can do. You know what I mean? It's about time. You know what I mean? It's about time.
Yeah. Amen.
You know, that we can do that, you know?
And I think that there could be, you know, the ending of it did leave it open that it could happen. And I think it really could be like the, Hispanic Tales from the Hood. I'm such a big fan of Tales from the Hood. I loved it. I thought, wow. I mean, not only a great anthology series, but like, again, showing Black stories and Black representation. And
yeah.
Luckily, Rusty Cundiff was able to do a couple of other ones years later that were really well done. But I would love to see that. I would love to see Satanic Hispanics become like the Latino Tales from the Hood. Like it could happen. You could do several different ones.
And again, there's so many like great, you know, especially in horror filmmakers that are, you know, Latino, and you know, just, and again, just give them an opportunity to like, you know, show what they got, you know, to really a worldwide audience, but especially to an American audience, you know.
And I would also like to say that Michael C. Williams is also in it. He makes a couple little appearances, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And also, I would just like to say I caught the Blair Witch stick figure spray painted on the wall in the background in the alley. I have no voice, and I almost screamed when I saw it. I was like, I got it. I saw it. There it is.
I do a lot of television, and I always try to put some kind of, you know, stick figure or something Blair Witch in whatever I do. And I was, you know, it was cool. And we didn't have it planned for this one, and we were in the alley, and we were like, you know, we go over there, and you know, told the AD, like, go Johnny, go over there and spray paint, you know, let's do this, and he was able to do it, and it's cool. I mean, you know, I love kind of, you know, those little inside jokes, and I know that most people don't get it, but it's cool that you saw it, you know.
Well, now I got to go back and rewatch Exists.
Well, I was going to be like,
is there a Blair Witch symbol here?
Do I need to go back and watch Queens of the South and look out for some little Blair Witch?
Well, I mean, like, there is, you know, I don't know if we did it for Exists, which was, you know, kind of an easy one. But we did, I remember in the early seasons of Queen of the South, we would put stick figures in there wherever we could. you know, just sort of like, there was one that, you know, like even on just on somebody's desk, like a cutaway of like a keyboard or something, whatever, we would put like a little stick man, like right next to the shot or whatever. And also Supernatural, my episode, like I think every episode of my Supernatural has like some kind of, like a Blair Witch Easter egg in it. So
that's amazing.
I try to put them in everything I do if I can, you know.
That's actually amazing. So now every time I see your name on anything, I'm going to be like leery, like side eyeing it. I'm going to be like watching it with binoculars.
Very closely.
Like, It's kind of like when you watch the Conjuring series, because ever since you saw Valak in The Conjuring 2, I now in The Nun look for Valak. You can see Valak spelled out.
I think
randomly.
That's a fun thing.
I love Easter eggs like that.
As a fan. I think people
that's what I love too. You know, like there's things like that in Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
I love that whole kind of inside. And you're right. Like, no, most people are not going to get it. But it's cool that, you know, some people will get it. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's cool to kind of acknowledge those, like, you know, true fans. You know what I mean?
Speaking of Star Wars, there was an amazing, in Indiana Jones, there was an amazing family at Horror Hound that had an incredible Indiana Jones cosplay. And it was from, did you see it? It was from, it was perfect. Temple of Doom. And I mentioned and I didn't catch this till years later, the little Easter egg in there that the club was Club Obi-Wan, that that was perfect for somebody that's a Star Wars and an Indiana Jones fan, like growing up with both of them. Like,
there's some, that one, like, you know, Temple of Doom is, I think, I mean, I love Raiders because, yeah, it's classic.
Oh, yeah.
But I really do love Temple of Doom. I think it's, you know, probably my second favorite Indiana Jones movie. And because at that point, you knew it was George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. And so you were kind of looking for those things. And I remember it leaked early. It leaked like, you know, some image of that, and oh, there's a outside shot, and it's Club Obi-Wan. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool, man. You know, just like that, because that's exactly the kind of stuff that you know, I was just a kid, but I was like, that's exactly the kind of stuff that I would be doing if I were, you know, if I were able to make films like this. So, it was cool that my two favorite filmmakers were like, you know, we're doing that, you know.
I remember when me and Becky went to go see the new Pet Sematary. And they were on a street, and the street was called
on the Dairy. Highway. On the highway,
on the highway,
and the highway marker sign said Dairy.
And I mean, obviously Stephen King, he does that. He has a whole universe, but it's just so cool when you catch that stuff.
I caught another one because of the eclipse. People have been showing. Dolores Claiborne is a Stephen King film. I feel like that does not get the credit that it deserves. And yeah, there's
I agree.
I adore that film. And there's a part in the film where she said, you're going to be doing a long stretch at Shawshank. And that is the only time that there's a little, like, it lets you know this is a Stephen King film. Like, that's the only time that it's ever mentioned that you're like, oh, wow. Like, it takes you out of it. You almost forget. Until she said that, and you're like, you're right back in the universe again. But yeah, I'm glad I've been seeing clips of that after the eclipse, because I love Kathy Bates and Dolores Claiborne. I feel like never gets the credit it deserves, because it is an incredible film. It's just an amazing film.
Because, like, I think what happened was that people were expecting another Misery.
Yeah. Yeah,
because you know it's Kathy Bates, it's Stephen King, and you know that's not that movie. You know what I mean?
No.
It's cool as hell, but it's not Misery. And I think they tried to market it as kind of like a Misery, and you know, because obviously the studios just market movies. They don't care really. They're looking for that first weekend, and they don't care what they do. You know, so. I think it wasn't marketed well, but yeah, I like that movie too.
Yeah, it was very well done. Very, very deep and dark in a trauma way, but definitely worth seeing. Well,
yeah,
because
and Kathy Bates is like, she's good at everything.
Oh, yeah.
Kathy Bates is...
She's amazing.
We are not worthy.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. Eduardo, before we let you go, again, thank you so much for this. This has been great. Just chatting about films and our love of films and nerding out about Star Wars and everything else.
And Bigfoot. And I love the fact that we got to nerd out about Bigfoot.
That is amazing, because Bigfoot deserves the love. And I agree with you in not wanting to go out. We're kind of amateur ghost hunters, and we've been to several haunted places like Waverly Hills Sanatorium and where they shot the Shawshank Redemption.
Ohio State Reformatory.
Yeah, I would rather go out in the dark and look for ghosts than Bigfoot any day. I have to agree with you.
Well, one little thing real quick. We were at Indiana State Sanatorium, and we were outside, and you heard a whistle.
And the lady that worked there said that she thinks that she had a Bigfoot encounter.
And I'm like, I would rather have a Bigfoot encounter than a whistle. Because whistles are usually skinwalkers, and I'm not about that life.
So if it's ghosts or Bigfoot, definitely ghosts.
Definitely, but
if it's Bigfoot or skinwalkers, Bigfoot. Definitely Bigfoot. Okay.
It was crazy, too, because we were walking towards the front of the building, and Becky looks at me and she goes, did you just hear a whistle? And I was like, if you heard it, you didn't hear it. If you seen it, you didn't see it.
Especially when you're in middle of nowhere, Indiana, at an old sanatorium.
That's it's like there's so much. Again, it's a lot of it is your imagination, you know, but it's just like you can't help it, you know. Like there's an abandoned or like a closed down mental hospital in Vancouver that they use in many shoot. I've shot there many times, and you go in there, there's like it's a weird place. And if you shoot there at night, there's always something weird happening. You always hear something, or somebody sees a shadow, and it's a creepy place, man. But again, I I mean, I scare pretty easily, you know.
Same here. Same here.
So the idea, yeah, I kind of stay away from stuff like that. You know, my wife is like, oh, I would love to see a ghost. I'm like, nah, I'm fine without seeing any of that stuff. I'm fine just kind of, you know, not witnessing something like that.
So before we wrap up, I'll tell you this really funny story about happened. Speaking of that, it happened at Ohio State Reformatory. So when we went there, they were having the week before.
There was an anniversary.
There was an anniversary for Shawshank. So there was a bunch of cardboard cutouts of the characters in the jails.
In the actual cells
as well. Yeah. So, you know, when they actually like turned all the lights off and we're investigating, me and Becky are by ourselves in one of the cell blocks, and she looks over, and there is a cardboard cutout inside the door.
And I think it was Morgan Freeman, too, of all things.
And inside the door of the jail cell, she got so scared, she jumped in my arms, my glasses flew off my face, and the experience was absolutely hilarious, especially when we realized what she got scared of.
Eduardo, it was very much a Scooby-Doo moment. It was... We were Scooby and Shaggy in that moment, and I was Scooby, and I jumped into her arms. It was so perfect, and yeah, it was.
And my glasses didn't break, and it was great. It was a great time. She kept apologizing, and I was like, "That was so funny," because when we realized it was a cardboard cutout.
Oh my god, yeah, that's freaky though.
Well, your adrenaline's going, and like you said, you know, we're in an old prison, so...
You can't see very well, so obviously, just looking over and seeing a big white figure, you're gonna... Jesus.
Yeah, you're gonna freak out. Yeah, absolutely. And also, just like the you know, when you're in that state of, you know, again, like in a prison or in the middle of the woods, it's like you're already at a kind of like a cautious level.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of things you see, you're like, oh my, you know, you always make out, you know, everything turns into a monster or you know, a serial killer or, you know, a ghost or something. Like, so yeah, look, it's fun if you're safe, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
In those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't really enjoy them. Like, again, like even haunted houses, like for Halloween and stuff, I don't like those things, you know?
She took me to my first one a couple years ago because I had a very bad experience as a child at a haunted house. Because I wasn't into haunted houses either. And I think more of my thing is like, I don't like people touching me. And I know that's like a new thing with these haunted houses where they get like interactive and they get up in your face and... I'm like, no, thank you. Please don't do that.
You get in my face, you're getting punched in the face.
After COVID, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we need to. I think that 6-foot thing should have never went away. Just me personally.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Personal spaces. Is there anything before we let you go that any new projects you're working on or anything you've got coming up that's in the works that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing my partner Greg and I are working on this thing called Emerald Anvil, and it's emeraldanvil.com, and it's like it has some horror elements, but it's kind of like we're definitely outside our comfort zone, but we've built this like huge world. And there's all these, again, kind of like Blair Witch style, there's all these like multimedia kind of projects. There's there's a podcast going on right now, and there's going to be a book, there's going to be a game, you know, all these kind of different things that kind of examine or like kind of explore different parts of this world. And it's basically we're kind of taking fairies and kind of turning them kind of evil and kind of hardcore and like murderous, and we're kind of doing the adult version of fairies, you know what I mean? And it's really a lot of fun, and it's a really gonna be a really deep world. But yeah, I appreciate if people like, you know, just if you want to check that out, it's like fantasy, young adult fantasy, but it's really good. It's really deep, and it's got a cool story. And I think, if you really were to get into all everything, it'd be a lot like Blair Witch, where you get like these different kind of, you know, stories of the bigger picture. But anyway, if you guys, you know, if people want to check that out, we're really excited about it. It's called EmeraldAnvil.com. So
it's, yeah, Becky just looked it up. It's right. Giving D&D a lot. It's giving like a D&D vibe.
Oh my God. Yeah. My partner, Greg, who wrote most of it, is like, you know, he was like a D&D master, and
nice.
It's definitely very D&D, you know, oriented, you know.
Love it.
Well, I love, besides horror, I love that whole world. Anything with, you know, Lord of the Rings, my husband played Warcraft, anything in that world.
You'll like this. It's a fun story. And again, there's a bunch of things that are coming up and that kind of expand the story every time something comes out, you know, so.
Well, we'll definitely tag that for sure. We'll definitely tag it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Eduardo, for coming on the podcast and offering to come on the podcast and talking to us about, you know, all of the things and just chatting with us. It's been a great time, and we very much appreciate that.
Well, no, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun, and you know, I always like to talk about Bigfoot, so that was kind of a cool part of it.
That was awesome.
I'm not gonna lie, when I talked to you at the con and came over and talked to you about Exists, your face lit up, and I was like, ah, he's a Bigfoot man.
I get to talk about Bigfoot.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could talk about Bigfoot all, you know, all day long. Yeah, cool. Yeah, thanks for having me, and it was a lot of fun. You know, maybe I could come back another time.
Yeah, we would love to have you
back on. You're a friend of the show for life. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime you want to promote anything, hit me up on one of the socials, and we got you.
Sounds cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much, sir. Have a good rest of your night.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye.
All right, guys.
That was surreal.
And my voice barely held out, but
there was one part I was like, oh honey, write down what you want me to say.
I wouldn't have missed that for the world. I told Casper, I said, I don't care how I feel. We are fucking making that happen. I am turning 40 this year, and 15-year-old me is literally screaming like, this is healed. This is healed so much. Like, this is...
It was just absolutely so amazing to just talk to him that we, you know, we were like, we're doing press for the film festival. And then he's like, oh, you got a podcast? And then he just gives us his business card and wants to come on. And we're like, yeah. And he's been so kind, and he's a cool dude. And to get to talk to him about all of the things that he's done, and, you know, things that he's a great, he had, I got
to nerd out with Eduardo Sanchez about Bigfoot and Star Wars. Like, I mean, what?
Hello? But, I was going to say something and it's gone.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Oh, it's gone.
Did you lose a member, Barry?
I always lose
a member berry. My member berries are gone.
So next week, because we told you guys, we got a clash of amazing interviews coming up.
Also, I just want this to be a message to all the independent filmmakers out there.
Yes.
Listen to what that man said, that, you know, he's in his late 20s, student loan debt, broke, and still made a film that he was passionate about. And 25 years later, look at where his life is. Look at how much the Blair Witch Project blew up. All of you independent filmmakers out there, do not give up. Do not be discouraged. Make your film. Follow your passion and just do it, because you never know what could come of it.
I highly doubt he ever thought it would become what it is now.
Like, I don't think any of them do.
I don't think any of them do. Like, Hell House LLC is another big one. Paranormal Activity is another big one, where it's like, you start from nothing. Paranormal Activity had, what, $15,000?
Oren Pelle shot that in his house.
Exactly.
I don't think he had any idea.
It was Katie and Mika got paid $500. And I think it was only a $15,000 budget. Look at that movie.
Yeah.
So, like, do the thing. It's like, there's this TikTok trend going around now that says, say the weird thing. People want realness. Do the weird thing. Do the thing you're scared of, because people want that. People want realness. People want new things. And that's why I love so much that we're promoting these films and these independent filmmakers, because it is. It's a whole bunch of new. Like, it's a bunch of stuff that you've never seen before, or you're like, I've heard of the concept, but this is done in such a new way. And it's just, it's very refreshing.
Yeah, and again, I'm loving more representation, more Black representation, more Hispanic representation, more Asian representation in horror, more women, more queer representation in horror. Like, there is an audience that is craving that, and we need that. And make Satanic Hispanics too. Like, make that happen. Make the sequel. Like, we need to see that happen. If you guys haven't watched it, it's on Shudder. And again, you don't have to be Hispanic or Black or brown to appreciate it. But it's very well done. All of the segments in it are very well done. And keep a lookout for that Blair Witch stick figure Easter egg.
I have to go back now and look for it and everything. All right, guys. So next week, we will be interviewing... His name is Rob. His name is Robert, but he goes by Rob. He did a short film for Horror Hound called No Slasher Here, and we are very excited to, because he did his short film was actually very good, and I was very impressed. I was very impressed with his short film, so I can't wait to talk to him about it. I can't wait to talk about him about movies. What his favorite scary movie is, and we got a lot of interviews coming up, guys.
Yeah, I think so. This will be the start of our Horror Hound Film Festival interviews, mm-hmm. officially.
Rob is the start, yes. So of course, guys, you know we have all the socials. We're Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. DFWTO podcast, DFWTO 8493, DFWTO 8811, my bad. If you have any questions, concerns, want to say hey, or have any ideas for the podcast, please send them to DFWTO8493@gmail.com. And then last but not least, please follow and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, and Podbean, good lord. It's because I had to switch out Google Podcasts, and now I've had to put in Amazon, and my brain's like, what are they again?
That is kind of cool that we're on Amazon, though, but...
Right? And we've been on Amazon for a minute, and I just decided to block that out of my brain.
And I promise, guys, my voice will be back next week. I know I've sounded like a frog this entire time. I hope you guys
enjoyed it. Well, you know, Frogman, so...
We were on a Frogman roll for a couple weeks, so I guess the frog is within me. The frog is in my throat.
The frog was around you, and now the frog is within.
Funny story, when my niece was little, and I told her that I had a frog in my throat, she went and told my mother-in-law, she's like, Mamaw, Annie's got a frog. She really thought I had a frog in my throat. So I just love telling that story because like, I thought it was so fucking cute.
Get that out.
Get that frog out of your throat.
God.
I'm trying. I'm a doctor. Guys, I'm trying.
She really
I'm shruggering. Okay. I'm really.
Oh my God.
I'm really shruggering. We're all shruggering. I'm really shruggering.
All right, guys. We love you so much. Thank you as always for your support. And remember,
don't fuck with the original.
Bye.